Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Jean, and I'm in a band / I am the artist Saint Lucia.
Johannesburg, and then in the middle of there was Liverpool, and then there was Brooklyn,
yeah.
And there's a boys' choir, which we have to get back to.
Yeah.
And age 11-ish.
It's difficult for me to kind of pick something that I want to talk about because I feel like in some way it's all important in some kind of way, and all those parts of my journey, you know, from, you know, growing up in Johannesburg and going to the Drakensberg Boys Choir, which was basically doing what I'm doing now, but as a kid, and, you know, performing in front of audiences and just like this whole crazy thing.
Where did the Knox come into your life? Because I can't quite figure out the chronology.
Man, I don't really know where I should start with this. But, you know, I moved to the States because I got a job as a jingle writer, as a staff yes. jingle writer at a company called The Lodge. And I worked there for like about two and a half years. And my whole sort of goal while I was working there was, you know, that wasn't like the end game for me. Like, I wanted to use that as a way to learn about production, to teach myself about instruments and genres and everything, and to, you know, over time save up enough money that I could buy, you know, enough equipment to have my own kind of small studio set up. So I did that, and eventually, you know, I had enough stuff and I'd saved up enough money, and I quit that job. And I was very fortunate that the company continued to sponsor my visa. And, you know, I set up the small studio in Williamsburg. I had a friend who had the studio in this building, and like the Dap Kings had their studio in that same, on that same floor. And like, there was all this crazy stuff going on. And you know, and then I just set about working on whatever it was going to be. And at the time I had this project called Kites, which was sort of my musical project while I was a jingle writer. And I guess the goal for me was, you know, basically I'd finished an EP for Kites, and I had this choice where I could either spend this money on promoting this EP, or I could spend it on basically building out a studio space. And, you know, I just took the long view and I decided to spend the money on building out the small studio. And yeah, then over the next few years, I just, you know, developed this, what ended up being Saint Lucia, you know. But in the interim, I kept working sort of freelance, and I produced some things for a few friends. Yeah, and then, you know, I had this sort of body of work that I could tell had this kind of like sound, and I met our old drummer Nick Brown through the guy that I was working with, who was mixing and recording drums for all the Saint Lucia stuff. And he, I think, you know, we sort of started sending music back and forth, and I think he really liked what I was doing. And then one day at he was hanging out with Ben from the Knox, and I think just like played one or a couple of my songs in the background without saying anything, and Ben just was like, what is this? And I think from that point, then we got connected, and their manager at the time, Renee, started managing us. We signed to their small label Heavy Rock, and they released The Old House and All Eyes on You. And then from there, we sort of springboarded onto Neon Gold, Columbia, that whole thing.
You know, people work really hard these days because they can't put you in EDM, thank goodness. But still,
some people still do.
Well, they try. But it's, I mean, come on. You know, but it's electronic music.
Yeah.
And we said this as we were walking over here, but you use, of course, there's stuff in the box. Everything has to be, you know, there has to be some stuff in the box.
Yeah.
But there's also a ton of real instruments. So can we somehow clear this all up? Or do you think that there's just no way we're ever going to get around the fact that people just assume because some things are in the box that it's electronic?
I mean, I think...
And do we care? You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because I think unless you are deeply involved in music and really, really deeply care about it, you know, you're going to want an easy way to categorize things in your head. You know, you're going to want, you know, and like, and I think you and I probably do it with things that we're not that passionate about, or just, yeah, whatever, something that we don't know that much about, and that maybe like we're not paying that thing the service that it deserves, but we just do not have the time in our day to care about those things, you know? But yeah, I think, you know, with Saint Lucia, there's definitely a lot of different stuff going on. It's definitely difficult for me to categorize it, you know. I feel like almost any genre description of it or description of it that I've ever heard annoys me in some way, because like there's just so much going on. I mean, obviously it is pop music in a lot of ways, you know, it is in the general realm of pop music, but like there's like progressive elements, you know, there's a lot of acoustic instruments, you know, a lot of people just say like it's synth pop, but like there's like possibly more acoustic instruments than actual synthetic like synths and keyboards and stuff on each track, you know? So it's kind of, it's just one of those things where like I think maybe over time people will see us differently, but for now it's just convenient for people to just say like that we are an 80s pop band, you know, where I just think that to me there's so much more to it, but I also understand that people need to like need a convenient way to put things in a box, you know.
I learned about you in the most amazing way. So I was at South by Southwest and I was at the Cedar Street Courtyard. And I was at that show. And you know, my
is that the one where I ran off stage?
That right. And I was at that show and it was my first time seeing you, and I was surrounded by lots of other people, and you know that your band, Troopers That They Are, all looked at each other, went, you know, and I saw it. I remember I was on the other side of the stage, right? I don't know what was going on with you, but I know that obviously you didn't feel you were gonna be able to put on the performance you wanted to put on.
Yeah.
And then you came back. That told me something about you and your dedication to what you do.
Well, thanks, man.
So that was really, but man, that must have been a really interesting moment.
That was,
I know it's dangerous to talk about, but I was. That was the first time I saw you.
I mean, I have no problem talking about it. We you know, I think it's really good to be, it's good and really healthy to be open about like the negative experiences of your life, you know? And yeah, I mean, it's crazy because we've actually been talking about this a lot over the last few days. We've told like a bunch of people the story for some reason, but yeah, basically, you know, it was South by Southwest. We'd for some reason booked 13 shows in 5 days. You know, everybody around us was losing their voices. Like Lizzie lost her voice from his mister. Leanne LaHavas lost her voice. Sam from X Ambassadors lost his voice as well. So all these people were losing their voices, you know, and like, I want to blame it on some kind of sickness, but I think, you know, the honest answer is that I think we just overdid it a little bit. And on top of that, I mean, it's not just the shows, it's the talking to people in between and the socializing and the drinking and stuff. And, you know, I woke up that morning, I had no voice left. We got on stage. I was like, I have no voice. And they were like, just, we have to do it. This is a really important Sony showcase. Usher was like upstairs. There were all these people there. And we started the first song and I opened my mouth and like nothing came out. And I tried again and nothing came out. And it was like, it was literally like all the trees in the forest of my brain just like collapsed. And I just almost like blacked out and I just ran off stage. And I went and I sat in the alley outside that like whatever all the bums had like peed and done their business on. And I sat there and literally I was crying my eyes out. I was just like, I felt like this was like the lowest point of my life up until this point. Just felt like I was going to like lose everything. And Rob Stringer and Ashley Newton, you know, Rob, head of Columbia, Ashley Newton, he's not with him anymore, but ex-vice president, came out and were like, oh, mate, don't worry, it'll be okay, mate. And then next thing, Patricia runs out and she's like, Jean-Philippe Robler, you get up with your ass right now and come back down. And I was like, but I can't, I have no voice. I was like my throat was just completely messed up. And she somehow convinced me to go and I went down and like I still could barely sing, but we still did the show. And that was show one of three on that day. So we had two more shows and I went and steamed myself and somehow made it through the other two.
So, you know, back in the days of the Brill Building, right, everybody co-wrote. Right? I mean, there was, you know, there were a million, but they never called it co-writing back then. It was two people that were already, you know, friends, had a way of thinking, one played the piano, one played, and this is what they did. And then somewhere, I think it probably started in Nashville. I can't even point out what year it was, but everybody was like, okay, you're an artist, you have to co-write. Mm-hmm. So what I'm curious about, we're not going to go through, you know, the fact that it was, you know, uncomfortable at first and went through, because that's written. I'm more interested in where was that moment that you said, you know, I want to bring somebody else in, or was it somebody who said to you, you should bring somebody else in. You know, because, I mean, you've got, you had, again, we talked about Jack. Yeah. You had great co-writers. But still, as somebody who's in as individualistic as you are about your style and the history you have, what switch flipped that you said, okay, for this next record, I want to switch it up?
I don't know. I was thinking of so many things when you were asking me that question. But I guess I'm going to start it from a point of, like, you know, when I was in, when I had, like, my first few bands before I went and became a jingle writer and all that, you know, I always found that, you know, because I didn't have such a great skill set in terms of production, recording and stuff, that often the results that we would end up with as a band, like in like a proper band situation, I would always feel like they never reached their full potential because it ended up being this kind of like compromise product, you know, in some kind of way where everyone has their say, there's not like one clear leader, whatever. So that, because of that, I sort of turned away and decided to just do my own solo thing, you know, which I love doing and, you know, have been doing for, you know, probably close to about 10 years now, you know, and I love doing it because, you know, I only have to answer to myself, you know, I can make my, you know, make my own decisions, call my own shots. But the problem with that is that sometimes I think you can get stuck in one way of thinking and not even like realize it, you know, and you can be pushing against a brick wall and be repeating your own ideas and not, you know, and sort of not realize that you're doing that. Not that I think that I am doing that or have been doing that, but I think to me, the best way of combating that is putting yourself outside of your comfort zone. And often I feel like a good indicator of where your comfort zone ends is at what point you start, like what things you dislike or you have sort of a negative reaction towards. And, you know, I feel like for the last few years, the years before I did those co-writes, I had this kind of like, I just had this little bit of like distrust or dislike for what I perceived to be this like LA writing shortcut thing, where it just felt like all these artists who had like 10, you know, 9 great songs off their album, but songs that the label didn't deem as being hit potential, would then be sent off to LA to write with these like writers who've written like all these other, you know, alternative radio hits or pop hits, and then they just come away with a hit, and in general the songs wouldn't really sound like them, you know. And so I sort of had this like distrust and dislike of that idea, because I've always wanted to be true to myself as an artist. And but then I just thought, maybe I should just like try it because I have some extra time, and maybe I should just try being out of my comfort zone and just not, you know, because who knows what'll happen. And yeah, like I said in other interviews in the beginning, it definitely wasn't easy, and I felt like I was kind of like that. It was kind of, you know, because I'm used to really being in control of my own process and driving my own ship, and really, you know. And then there were a couple situations where I didn't feel like that in the beginning. But then as the song kind of revealed itself, I saw a lot more of myself in that, you know?
Visuals are equally important to the music. But what I sense is, you know, some artists will, you know, write a song and then they're like, okay, what can we attach to make this cool? But for you, I think you're thinking about it all kind of linear.
Like you said, I'm a huge Miyazaki fan. I just love art, whether it's art or film or music, that has a lot of attention to detail in it, you know. And that doesn't mean that like something has to be overstuffed, you know, like some, to me it's just like when something feels really, really complete, you know. And sometimes that takes an orchestra and a choir and 20 electric guitars, and sometimes that takes one drum machine and a singer, you know. But to me it's just like trying to feel, you know, I like everything, you know, from our live show to the music to the cover of the album, to be representative of each other and to be almost, you know, indistinguishable from each other. And they all sort of give clues to each other's kind of existence in some kind of way.
What's your filter? How do you know? How do you listen to your own stuff and go, okay, that one, that one, that one, that one, because they're all your babies and they're all beautiful?
Man, this is so funny because I've kind of been wrestling with this idea over the last few weeks, you know, because I think, you know, when you finish an album, you've kind of gone through this whole journey and you're at the end now. Now you're kind of like, now the album's out and you see how the world's reacting to it. And before it comes out, you have all these ideas of maybe what like you want the next album to be like. And you have all these ideas that haven't been released into the world. And then when it comes out and you see how people react to it, that in itself changes your idea of what you want the next thing to be like.
Maybe I could have done that, or maybe I could have done that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I generally, like, once I finish the album, I'm aware, I'm, like, totally fine with being, like, that's done. Obviously, there are some things where I'm like, oh, I could have done that a bit differently, whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. For me, it's just the idea of what I want to put out next and what is worthy of being a new, actually released Saint Lucia track changes over time. Like, I will often open up really old ideas and get really excited by them and work on it for 2 hours and then never return to it again. And then come up with another idea and then be really excited about that and then wake up tomorrow and be like, oh, that's really not that good, you know? And then suddenly a really, really old idea, I'll remember it, and then I'll have some new way of like arranging it that makes it suddenly more current again, you know? But to me, yeah, it's all about just trying not to repeat myself too much. You know, it's like I realize that there is like personality in music, and you can't be too much of, like, for want of a better term, too much of a Nazi about like never repeating yourself, because I think, you know, I think sometimes it's good that there's a little bit of repetition because that becomes like your style in a way, you know. But I like to feel like what I'm doing is somehow challenging me and is just exploring some kind of new path or rhythm or something.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.